It's Marketplace Tax for Monday the 12th. I'm Ben Johnson in New York. This week, as part of a new deal, Twitter will live stream the first of 10 Thursday night NFL football games. This might make sense for both brands in some ways, because by some measure, Twitter is the unofficial social network of pro football players and angry fans. So it's a bit dicey. Evidence abounds, like in this bit from the fictional HBO show about the NFL, Ballers.
And no more f***ing Twitter.
That would be Dwayne The Rock Johnson's character admonishing a football player for tweeting things he shouldn't. And right now, Twitter as a company is down with seconds to go on the clock and no timeouts left. Can the streaming deal with the NFL bring in much-needed cash and cachet? Jessica Liu is senior analyst at Forrester.
Twitter has been struggling. It's no secret that they have been suffering in user growth as well as ad revenue growth. So this is Twitter's, unfortunately, I'm going to use a terrible analogy, but a little bit of a Hail Mary for them to try to resuscitate their social network.
Twitter paid a lot of money for this deal. So what does success look like for them?
For them, this is really a play to capture more eyeballs, more active eyeballs, and really stimulate conversation on the Twitter platform. And then the hope is that obviously the advertisers will come and they can obviously, you know, increase ad load or raise ad pricing so that they can increase their ad revenue ultimately.
Why do you think the NFL has chosen to ink this deal with Twitter?
It's a great question. I think the NFL courted several technology providers, one actually being Facebook, interestingly enough. I think it goes back to Twitter's ability to really capture real-time conversations. You can often find information on Twitter from on the street or in the street, witnesses faster than what you would see posted on Google's news feed or even just broad Google searching. So Twitter's ability to really marry real-time social conversation with live events puts them in a unique position more so than a Facebook or an Instagram, for example.
Jessica Liu, senior analyst with Forrester. Jessica, thank you very much.
Thank you, Ben. Appreciate it.
MasterCard is releasing new data today about the adoption rate for their chip-enabled or EMV consumer cards at locations around the country. Since October of last year, adoption has grown 400%, with 33% of all merchant locations being chip-capable as of July. MasterCard says EMV card adoption is important in the world of fighting fraud, and who among us doesn't remember the Target hack? Here's Chiro Aikat, Senior Vice President of U.S. Product Delivery at MasterCard.
These merchants who have either completed the EMV rollout or very close to completing the EMV rollout, we have seen a 54% decrease in counterfeit fraud costs for these retail merchants versus those merchants that have not adopted EMV or in the early process of adopting EMV. We continue to see a 77% increase in fraud costs year over year.
Aikat says MasterCard's goal is to get at least 60% of transactions done by chip cards. Using open source research to combat corruption sounds lofty, but what if I told you that in many cases it might be as easy as looking at Instagram accounts to identify the make and cost of gadgets being shown off by the friends and children of Russian government officials and comparing those price tags to those officials' salaries? Eric Toller trains journalists in open source investigation. Eric, thanks for chatting. Open source research is often used in war reporting, right?
A lot of people use it for investigations with conflicts, such in Syria and Ukraine. We have all sorts of videos of people recording from war zones, both participants and normal citizens. But we can also use it with corruption investigations because people leave all sorts of traces behind of the ill-gotten property that they buy with corruption.
So give me a specific example here. Some of the examples that you've written about are really fascinating, like this case of Vladimir Putin's press secretary.
Yeah, that was a fairly infamous case from Alexei Navalny's group, FBK, which is an anti-corruption group. And what they did is they found photographs of him with this very gaudy, ugly watch he had on. And then they were able to trace the exact watch that he had. It had this ugly skull on it because it's pretty easy to track down. And it was worth hundreds of thousands of dollars, which is many times over his annual salary. There have been other examples, too, of using the same guy, social media around the same guy, Dmitry Peskov, the press secretary. For example, he took a vacation for his honeymoon on this one of the most expensive yachts in the world. And they found information about this by tracing social media from his stepdaughter's account. And she posted pictures from Sicily and elsewhere, partying around the Mediterranean on this yacht that he could never have been able to afford with a normal salary.
I would assume that with all of the extra data out there these days and all these tools that you're talking about, it's actually easier to catch corruption. But I suppose corruption itself is getting more complicated as well, right? I mean, do you feel like this stuff is winning the battle?
I'm not sure if it's winning any battles, but I think it's bringing up some more awareness at the very least, because there's always excuses people can say, right? This is a gift, right? This $700,000 watch when I make $150,000 a year was a gift. Well, yes, but what was the gift for? What was exchanged for that gift? So I think that does bring more awareness, and it can expose or bring embarrassment to public officials. Maybe they may curb their public displays of excess. I don't know if that's a win or not, but at least we can see some reflection of the work we do.
Eric Toller, he trains journalists in open source investigation, verification, and digital forensics for the web publication Bellingcat. Eric, thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me.
You can find Eric's piece at facebook.com/marketplacetech. I'm Ben Johnson, and that's Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.